Chapter 81. The Pequod Meets the Virgin. The predestinated day arrived, and we duly met the ship Jungfrau, Derek de Deer, master of Bremen. At one time the greatest whaling people in the world, the Dutch and Germans are now among the least. But here and there, at very wide intervals of latitude and longitude, you still occasionally meet with their flag in the Pacific. For some reason, the Jungfrau seemed quite eager to pay her respects. While yet some distance from the Pequod, she rounded to, and dropping a boat, her captain was impelled towards us, impatiently standing in the bows instead of the stern. "What has he in his hand there?" cried Starbuck, pointing to something wavingly held by the German. "Impossible! A lamp feeder!"
"Not that," said Stubb.
"No, no, it's a coffee pot, Mr. Starbuck. He's coming off to make us our coffee, is the Yarman. Don't you see that big tin can there alongside of him? That's his boiling water. Oh, he's all right, is the Yarman."
"Go along with you," cried Flask. "It's a lamp feeder and an oil can. He's out of oil and has come up begging."
However curious it may seem for an oil ship to be borrowing oil on the whale ground, and however much it may invertedly contradict the old proverb about carrying coals to Newcastle, yet sometimes such a thing really happens. And in the present case, Captain Derek de Deer did indubitably conduct a lamp feeder, as Flask did declare. As he mounted the deck, Ahab abruptly accosted him, without at all heeding what he had in his hand, but in his broken lingo the German soon evinced his complete ignorance of the white whale, immediately turning the conversation to his lamp feeder and oil can, with some remarks touching his having to turn into his hammock at night in profound darkness, his last drop of Bremen oil being gone, and not a single flying fish yet captured to supply the deficiency, concluding by hinting that his ship was indeed what in the fisheries technically called a clean one, that is, an empty one, well deserving of the name Jungfrau or the Virgin. His necessity supplied, Derek departed. But he had not gained his ship's side when whales were almost simultaneously raised from the mastheads of both vessels. And so eager for the chase was Derek that without pausing to put his oil can and lamp feeder aboard, he slewed round his boat and made after the Leviathan lamp feeders. Now, the game having risen to leeward, he and the other three German boats that soon followed him had considerably the start of the Pequod's keels. There were eight whales, an average pod. Aware of their danger, they were going all abreast with great speed straight before the wind, rubbing their flanks as closely as so many spans of horses in harness. They left a great wide wake, as though continually unrolling a great wide parchment upon the sea. Full in this rapid wake, and many fathoms in the rear, swam a huge, humped old bull, which by his comparatively slow progress, as well as by the unusual yellowish incrustations overgrowing him, seemed afflicted with a jaundice or some other infirmity. Whether this whale belonged to the pod in advance seemed questionable, for it is not customary for such venerable leviathans to be at all social. Nevertheless, he stuck to their wake, though indeed their backwater must have retarded him, because the white bone or swell at his broad muzzle was a dashed one, like the swell formed when two hostile currents meet. His spout was short, slow, and laborious, coming forth with a choking sort of gush, and spending itself in torn shreds, followed by strange subterranean commotions in him, which seemed to have egress at his other buried extremity, causing the waters behind him to upbubble.
"Who's got some paregoric?" said Stubb. "He has the stomachache, I'm afraid. Lord, think of having half an acre of stomachache. Adverse winds are holding mad Christmas in 'em, boys. It's the first foul wind I ever knew to blow from astern, but look, did ever whale yaw so before? It must be he's lost his tiller."
As an overladen Indiaman bearing down on the Hindustan coast with a deckload of frightened horses careens, buries, rolls, and wallows on her way, so did this old whale heave his aged bulk, and now and then partly turning over on his cumbrous rib-ends exposed the cause of his devious wake in the unnatural stump of his starboard fin. Whether he had lost that fin in battle or had been born without it, it were hard to say.
"Only wait a bit, old chap, and I'll give you a sling for that wounded arm," cried cruel Flask, pointing to the whale line near him.
"Mind he don't sling thee with it," cried Starbuck. "Give way, or the German'll have him."
With one intent, all the combined rival boats were pointed for this one fish, because not only was he the largest, and therefore the most valuable whale, but he was nearest to them, and the other whales were going on with such great velocity, moreover, as almost to defy pursuit for the time. At this juncture, the Pequod's keels had shot by the three German boats last lowered. But from the great start he had, Derrick's boat still led the chase, though every moment neared by his foreign rivals. The only thing they feared was that from being already so nigh to his mark, he would be unable to dart his iron before they could completely overtake and pass him. As for Derrick, he seemed quite confident that this would be the case, and occasionally, with a deriding gesture, shook his lamp feeder at the other boats.
"The ungracious and ungrateful dog!" cried Starbuck. "He mocks and dares me with the very poor box I filled for him not 5 minutes ago!"
Then in his old intense whisper, "Give way, greyhounds, dog to it!"